I turn this over to another what I consider to be innovative decision by counsel, and that is to open up our judicial counsel meetings to public comment and to hear from folks about the administration of justice and how important it is for us to hear these reports so that we can continue to act responsibly and improve ourselves in the future. So at this point, I turn it over to Justice Moore.
Thank you, Chief. As we begin our public comment period, I want to mention that we are trying something different this time. Because we had so many speakers at our last meeting for our public comment period, each speaker was only allotted 1 minute. And in reality, that really didn't provide an appropriate time for them to express their concerns and suggestions. Our policy had always been to provide up to 3 minutes for a total of 30 minutes. So in order to allocate 3 minutes to each speaker, we will now accommodate 10 speakers in our public comment period on a first-come, first-served basis. And again, as we have done over the time period that we have instituted public comment, we want everyone to have the opportunity to express their thoughts and opinions to the Judicial Council. So if we can't accommodate a speaker in the time allotted for general comment, the speaker has the option of providing written comments to the council, which, as I indicated earlier, will be distributed electronically directly to each council member. Alternatively, we can offer them speaking time on a first-come, first-served basis during the comment period at our next regularly scheduled meeting. So at this time, we'll begin public comment. Please, to those who speak, remember this deals with the general administration of justice. It's not within our purview to overview individual cases or decisions of individual judges, so we ask you to honor that and limit your discussions again to the general discussion of administration of justice. Our first speaker for a period of 3 minutes, and I'll make a, I'll remind you of 30 seconds, that you have 30 seconds left, is Edwin Thomas Snell. And then if we could have the next person, Tanya Nemchik, Nancy, if you could have them wait at the gate. So please remember you have 30 minutes. Thank you.
3 minutes,
I'm sorry.
I haven't seen you, Justice Cantile, since I spoke at your confirmation hearing. You're looking quite well, sounding great.
Thank you.
But I warned the public and the world of your draconian jurisprudence and your misfit, morally judicial ideas. Weathering the storm was a small task getting here. It's weathering the storm brewing inside here that brings me here today. My name is E.T. Snell, and I hail from San Bernardino County. My website is www.etsnell.com. It has become so very obvious to me that the inhumanity caused by so many with their greed and cover-ups, that's greed and cover-ups, have caused so much pain and suffering to the humanity of others. Chief Justice, I spoke at about 1:05 at your confirmation hearing, and I forewarned the world of your humanitarian shortcomings. If I took all of the Bibles, all of the law books, all of the dictionaries, and tried to describe this morally unfit body, I could not do it. But I stand here before you today as a representative of children in foster care. Foster care is an abomination to God and humanity. Giving two-year-old children psychotropic medication. Oh my God, where are we at? Until the taxpayers wake up to this kid-for-cash scam, billions of dollars wasted, will things change. They're taking children under junk science. There's no federal mandate of federal drug screening. They're having trials, if you're lucky. Most of those people don't get trials. They're extorted out of their children. The statistics will show that only 10% of the kids taken are physically abused. Only 7% are sexually abused. That's 83% that never should have been taken. Millions of children taken from families have been ripped apart. LA grand juries show that 70% of the inmates come from foster care. Children in foster care are 10 times more likely to be abused. So kids for cash scam by billions of dollars. To show what morally unfit this body is, SBX 211 Section 5
30 seconds.
Shows Anyway, I've got these recalls of the judiciary, the Supreme Court, and I offer them to you today.
Just set them on the chair.
Okay,
please.
And I would like the stockings back, too, in the same spirit of the way you give children in foster care. God bless you all.
Thank you. All right, our next speaker is Tanya Nimchik on general judicial administration, and if we could have Barbara Coughlin please come forward and stand over by Nancy. Thank you, Tanya. You may begin.
Thank you for having me here today. I'm here today to speak on behalf of all the parents that don't have the tenacity or courage to be here themselves, or the means. This is not... There's not a member in this room that doesn't know about the family court crises that are going on, that children are dying and being forced to live with abusive parents. We've had the CJE and many other nonprofits that have been combating the family court system for decades, 25 plus years or more. This has been an ongoing issue. It's not new. I appreciate that the Judicial Council has had members in the recent months going out to different superior courts and talking with the presiding judges to listen to them whine about their financial woes and their issues in the family court system. However, one of the things that's not being talked about is the resources that's used towards cases that where corruption and legal procedures have taken place. And if we really want to start looking at the financial whines and cries of the superior courts, we should start looking about how they're actually using their resources. Case studies and data have proven that judges have been allowed to hold closed-door sessions and have been, due to the lack of recordings, publicly and litigants being able to record their own procedures, that these illegal procedures between the judges and attorneys have been going on for a long time. We know that the illegal procedures that have been going on have costed a lot of children their lives. And we want to be able to right some of this judgments. It has been brought to my attention over the many years that in order to right some of these cases that have been wronged, you have to get an attorney that has the right, and I put in quotes, the right relationship with the judges, because there are benefits that the judges get outside of the courtroom from certain judges that allow these procedures to go on. So we need to be able to bring recorders into the courtrooms, and we need to have more stringent auditing that combat some of this corruption. And there's many ways to go about doing this, and that's just one of them. But this has to stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, next year from Barbara Coughlin, and is Melinda Dier here? Or Brandon Dier? If not, if we could have Ruth Hall come up next. And stand by Nancy. All right, thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Barbara Coughlin. I was here last month as well. While I make my introductory comments in my 3 minutes, I'd like to refer you to the binder, item T, and appendix, the last page of exhibit T. First, I would like to again request a public hearing dedicated to hearing from the public so we don't have to keep coming here for 30 minutes. If you do it all at once, people from all over the state could come here and speak at once. Second, please be advised that the Judicial Council Futures Commission survey was prematurely closed prior to its December 5th deadline. I believe it should be reopened for those who tried to but could not complete it. Third, I prepared a detailed written comment dated December 10th. If you have it, please refer to it because it is relevant to what the last presentation about San Bernardino County was about. It is It regards the Judicial Council's proposed legislative priorities and its stated need for funding of 10 additional judgeships. We've heard this morning about courts being closed, judges not having staff, and yet one of the legislative priorities, one of the top priorities, is funding new judgeships. It doesn't make any sense. In addition, if you look at the Appendix A of Item T, there are 61 surplus AGPs in 23 counties, surplus judicial positions. Santa Clara has 19.4 surplus judicial positions, Alameda 14.9, Contra Costa 3.5. If you and those three counties combined have 11 vacancies. Why isn't there a reallocation of the vacancies to the needy counties like San Bernardino? San Bernardino has 5 vacancies right now. That's different. I used the November 30 data from the Judicial Council to get that number. I heard that there were more today. Why isn't the press for the governor, the press for this council, for the governor to fill those vacant positions instead of asking for funding for 10 more judicial positions? It doesn't make any sense. If the Judicial Council wants to have credibility with the legislature, it needs to maximize resources right now. Santa Clara and Alameda have 35 surplus judgeships. They should be reallocated. That entire system needs to be revamped. And then there should be a push for court reporters, official court records, things that will serve the public. Thank you. Please read the comment. It has all of the backup documents, and I think it's a disservice to those who can't attend to not have those posted online.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Ruth Hall. Thank you. I'm sorry. And if we could have Kathleen Russell come forward. I'm sorry. I'll start your 3 minutes now. I'm sorry.
I wish to thank our Honorable Chief Justice, whom I have a great deal of respect for, and the other members of the Council for allowing me to speak. I grew up trusting and believing in the judicial system. Recent observations that I and other court observers have made have been rather shocking, however, and I thought I should bring these to your attention. The following is a short list of observations. Judges punishing, threatening, and gagging women, children, and mandated reporters in retaliation for the reporting of sexual child abuse. California judges turning over children from California and other states to verify documented child abusers and into the international sex trade of other countries. California judges giving custody of children, including children from other states, to non-related stalkers and sex traffickers without any paternity trial and without any legal proof of paternity. Judges authorizing the creation of adoption papers without any notice to real parents and no notice to the Adoption Services Bureau of California's Department of Social Services in Sacramento. Protected parents being imprisoned on bogus charges without requisite constitutional procedures, protections, or rights, and or detained for months in solitary confinement without any hearings or charges at all. Court-appointed and other experts being threatened for verifying sexual child abuse, judges officially removing evidence of abuse from the record and adding misstatements disparaging protected parents, judges routinely and systematically ruling out of order motions to recuse those very judges for bias and conflict of interest. Please conduct your own investigation into this, and you'll find that this is going on. And I'd like to encourage you to install video cameras in every superior court, courtroom, and judicial chamber to protect the fairness and integrity of the judicial system.
30 seconds.
Okay. Children need to be allowed to speak. They want to speak to tell about what has happened to them. please consider that, and also please look into the financial ties between minors' consuls and abusers, and those ties need to be monitored, because quite often the minors' consuls are acting in the interest of the abusers and not in the children. I was going to speak on something else, but I don't have time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, we'll now hear from Catherine Russell, and if I could have Diane Hunter come forward too and stand with Nancy.
Good morning, Justice Miller, Chief Justice, members of the council. It's Kathleen Russell with the Center for Judicial Excellence. We really don't want to be here at all of your meetings for 30 minutes reiterating what we shared last time, but I do appreciate that we have 3 minutes instead of 1 minute this time. The judicial branch in California is truly in crisis, and I do want to reiterate our request for a 1 to 2 day public hearing so that we can have enough time to, for you all to properly hear what is going on the ground in the court crisis, of which we are hearing on the front lines. Just this past Monday, 9-year-old Eric and 5-year-old Alana Edwards were made national headlines because of murder-suicide that was triggered by a custody situation and litigation here in Southern California in Lancaster. This details are still emerging about this case, but it seems to fit the pattern of our research, which was recently written up in USA Today, that more than 350 children across the country, and that's a minimum number that we know of, that we've tracked, are being killed in the context of custody and divorce proceedings. The research is voluminous and clear. Children who are exposed to domestic violence suffer long-term problems if they survive, and yet they're routinely being given to domestic violence perpetrators in California family courts. The courts are failing our children. Supervised visits, which I see is on your consent calendar, the access to visitation funding, they're being turned on their head, and safe, protected parents are being placed on supervised visits while perpetrators of child sexual abuse and domestic violence are routinely getting custody of their children. This is not just a family court crisis either. Our organization is getting increasing reports from victims of probate court who report being fleeced by attorneys and other court professionals, and they watch as their family's entire life savings are being bled dry before their eyes. I understand you are the largest judiciary in the world, and I do feel for the incredible task that is, and it can't be easy, and I'm sure it's tough to manage. But we met yesterday while many were sitting home at weathering the storm with the governor's office, and it was suggested that we meet with Corey Jasperson about our 2015 legislative priorities, and we look forward to meeting with him and finding common ground. I do believe the court reporter issue is one that we can all agree on. There are others like judicial performance evaluations, which we've...
Your time is up.
Okay. We've requested that since 2007. We may not agree on it, but we hope that we can find some measure of accountability for the courts. Thanks.
Thank you. Diane Hunter, and then is Paulette Morris here? If not, could we have Kelsey McAllister come forward? And you may begin. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Diane Hunter. I'm a registered nurse of 15 years. I'm a college instructor. I'm a litigant, and I'm a member of the public. I've interviewed over 500 women in the last year, and so I'm speaking here for all of them. So imagine for a minute that you all went into a hospital, and every one of your doctors and nurses had 12 hours of education on all of your condition, and all of your doctors and nurses heard your complaints of any other symptoms. Supposedly you had bleeding from your rectum and you had cancer, and they did not believe you. How would you feel, and how would a member of your family feel, if 70 to 80% of you have died because of medical errors? So this is going on in our justice system. The research has shown, according to ACE, that there has been adverse childhood experiences contribute to a lot of health and societal problems and cost us millions, if not billions, of dollars. and you complain about your lack of funding, well, you're costing the public, due to your failure, a lot more money. And so here comes the anatomy of a child abuse and DV case. First, you have a perpetrator and a victim, and they have children together. The perpetrator is usually one that asks for a custody evaluation to look for psychological illness in the mother. Let me explain to you something if you don't know this already. Domestic violence is not a mental illness. Domestic violence is a pattern of coercive control. These perpetrators use the system, your system that we're paying for, to deny access to the children by to the mother. Usually it's the mother. So you're enabling these people and using our public money to do so. And a lot of these children have suffered because of that. So, and they're costing us a lot of money. So what I'm suggesting to you is we have cameras in the courtroom and that you educate your custody evaluators, minors counsel, and judges on domestic violence to prevent this from happening. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next we'll hear from Kelsey McAllister, and if I'm sorry if I pronounce this wrong. Einar Storm, if you're here, if you could come forward, and you may proceed. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Kelsey McAllister of Marin County, California. The California family law courts are endangering the lives of children, families, and communities. A handful of predatory lawyers, judges, and auxiliary service providers have hijacked our court system and have run rogue. They are maximizing the financial gains by fleecing families of all of their resources and creating protracted litigation to exploit the amount of federal and state funding funneling through their courts and into their pockets. The result has been a dramatic increase in child custody-related homicides. In the state of California alone, a new news story of a family law-related homicide shows up online every 6 weeks. A dramatic increase in the number of years that families are kept in litigation, the average now being 10 years. A dramatic increase in the cost of divorce and child custody arrangements for families. Families are being left homeless, penniless, possessionless, and at least one parent so marginalized that they become childless. The most dramatic examples of this are cases that involve domestic violence and child abuse. While 70% of divorce cases settle outside of the court, nearly all contested cases in the family law court system involve child abuse and domestic violence. Judges deny and ignore evidence produced by police departments, CPS, medical professionals, therapeutic professionals, educational professionals, and then deliver children into what all five of these entities are finding to be unsafe environments with absolutely no oversight. The outcomes for these cases are consistent throughout the state of California. No matter what type of the abuse, no matter how irrefutable the evidence, no matter what court, what county, in the state of California, when a child reports abuse, when a parent reports abuse, family law courts then give the identified abuser full or partial custody of these children. The child is removed from everyone who identified the abuse. The parents, grandparents, extended family members, siblings, doctors, therapists, teachers, anyone who stands up for that child to protect that child from abuse is removed from the child's life immediately. The abuser is given full rein to sequester that child from any avenue of help, and the results have been that these children are dying in the custody of these abusers. We are making the California Judicial Council members aware of the corruption that is currently taking place. History will remember this committee as either those who gave a voice to Californians or those who helped cover up the court's abuses of California's children and families. The public deserves a public hearing on these matters immediately.
Thank you. Einhorst Storm, and if Sherry, again, I apologize, Safapu, if you could come forward, you may begin. Thank you.
Good morning. As court watchers, we have witnessed something confounding and horrible, the deliberate suppression of evidence of severe neglect, battery, and sexual abuse of children. In spite of overwhelming evidence submitted to the courts by mandated reporters and forensic investigators expert in child abuse, including forensic cast interviews of children by law enforcement, medical records of board-certified doctors and therapists, all suppressed and not allowed on the record by Superior Court judges against the grave warnings and pleadings of protective parents. Court-appointed experts who support children's disclosures of abuse are willing to give exculpatory evidence to the court, are routinely ignored and prevented from placing their findings on the record. Judges leave experts sitting all day in the hallways of the courthouse and deny them entry to the witness stand to protect children. As the body count of small children rises in California, there is no entity that will hold these judges accountable for the harm they do to the children of this state. We are told that you are it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from, is it Sherry?
Sherry Salvador.
My name is Stephen Berto, and Sherry Safapo is yielding her time to me.
All right, thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. By way of introduction, I am a staff consultant for the Center for Judicial Excellence. I consult with them in areas of public policy, civic engagement, community outreach, as well as a broad range of other things. So, Madam Chief Justice, members of the council, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. I'd like to say a number of people here have been asking for a public hearing, and I certainly would join them in doing that. But what I would like to talk about today is your public participation processes. At your April 2014 meeting, Chief Justice, you proudly proclaimed that the Judicial Council would now be implementing appropriate enhancements to your existing public comment procedures that were put in place to, quote, reflect the Council's belief in the importance of public comment in enriching all of our discussions and our understanding of the diversity of opinions around any issue that comes before that body. Now, as somebody who spent their entire professional career in working in civic engagement and increasing public participation for nonprofit organizations and government agencies, that was absolutely music to my ears, and I applaud you for making that commitment. However, in recent meetings of this body, it seems that the the actual procedure of public comment have fell short of the spirit of your comments, Chief Justice. And I say that because at the October 27th, 28th meeting, many of the people who signed up to present public comment were denied the opportunity to do so. Furthermore, numerous people, some self-represented litigants who came to talk on specific agenda items, were prevented from doing so on day two, despite Justice Miller saying on day one that they expressly saying that they had the ability to do that, but they were shut out and not given that opportunity. When signing up to address the council at this meeting, I was told that I would not be able to present, despite emailing my request to speak one business day after the agenda was posted. Quite frankly, it appears that the actions of public procedure in the last few meetings are in stark contrast to the comments that were made at the April meeting when unveiling this process. But I am not here to point fingers, throw your words back at you, or any of that. I am here, again, like Kathleen said, we understand how important it is and how difficult of a job it is to administer the largest judiciary in the world. However, I'm here to say that as somebody who specializes in working with government agencies and nonprofits to improve their public participation processes, I would love to collaborate with you to help strengthen that process. I would do it free of charge because this is something I truly believe in. And quite frankly, I believe that if you do allow for more than 10 people or just a more robust and diverse discussion, a significant amount of your criticisms will go away simply by virtue of allowing people to be heard. Particularly those criticisms that the court doesn't want to hear from the court users. So again, I implore you, continue with this commitment to public participation. I would love to collaborate with you. The Center for Judicial Excellence would love to collaborate with you. And again, I feel you for all of the challenges of administering the largest court in the world. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
And then our last is Ronald Pierce. Is Ronald Pierce here? Morning. 3 minutes, please.
Good afternoon, and thank you for increasing it to 3 minutes. I appreciate that. As I'm sitting here listening today to the comments behind me of the mothers talking about how they're not getting enough protection for their children. It's interesting for me because I've been accused of domestic violence. I'm on the other side of the coin. And for a while there, I was upset at places that appeared to favor mothers over fathers. But I've met, in my trials and tribulations, many mothers who I just flat out, they're right. You know, they report legitimate abuse of their children, and they immediately are accused of causing trouble, and they immediately lose custody. And then what's harder for them after that is that after that happens, nothing they say will ever be heard. It's a sentence. On the other side of things, you have, and this is where I kind of, strangely, I feel for the judges. Because the judges are in the room, they've got a mom that's claiming all kinds of abuse, they've got a father that says she's lying, and so they're going to err on the side of caution and try to get some type of evaluation to find out what's really going on. That part of the process has been taken over. You know, what you then have are men, like myself, who've been acknowledged to not have committed domestic violence, and yet as I stand here today, I still have a domestic violence restraining order against me, my parental rights terminated, going on 7 years now. Divorce case not finished, still married, tons of marriage fraud, and I have to sit behind a restraining order and listen to my 13-year-old daughter talk about how the new guy wakes her up by spooning her and blowing on her neck. And there's nothing I can do about it except tell her, try talking to the school. And she does. And they don't do anything about it. There is a real human crisis going on in the court system. I have a UN complaint for torture against the California court system from back in 2009, right next to Richard Fine. I testified in front of I gave comment in front of the Elkins Family Law Task Force, and it was immediately treated like dirt by that task force. I was not taken serious at all. I did read the recommendations in detail, and they're good recommendations. Treating people as second-class citizens in the courtroom has to stop. But before that,
30 seconds.
There has to be a real hard look at what's going on in the courtroom, because between the financial interests of the players involved, especially where it goes to the corporations that evaluate these kinds of things, and the judges are not following the law in the courtroom. They're ignoring it. So there needs to be another task force, at least, to look into this stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Chief, that concludes public comment for today. Thank you to all the speakers.
Thank you. Thank you, Justice Miller.